This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of June the 10th, 2019. I'm Mason King. Okay, this construction cacophony you're hearing was recorded last week on the southwest corner of 25th Street and Sherman Drive. This will be the home of the new Martindale Brightwood branch of the Indianapolis Public Library. And when it opens next year, it will replace a small retail space that the library had leased for many years. And this is just one of four new IPL branches in the works, joining two others that have opened since December. Now, if I'm reading my dictionary of literary terms correctly, this is an example of irony. Libraries are supposed to be quiet, and this site, for the moment, is very loud. As you'll hear in a few minutes, though, libraries aren't that quiet anymore. You don't get shushed by modern librarians. This latest generation of libraries isn't like the one you or your parents grew up with, that essentially were storehouses for books and periodicals. They're evolving to accommodate the prevalence of digital communication and the need in many communities for shared public space, a place to meet, a place to organize, a place for entertainment or career education or even supplemental meals. Now, several years ago, CEO Jackie Needis led the library as it embarked on a bold plan to fund and build the six new branches, several of which are replacing other branches, and renovating others. And I spoke with her last week about this building spree, but maybe more importantly, this fundamental shift in the way the library system sees its need for real estate and how it uses its branches to serve residents. Jackie, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Happy to be here, Mace.
Now, before we get started, I have a quick question that I've wanted to ask for about 20 years.
Okay.
And maybe you hear this a lot. I took out some books in the late 1990s. I never returned them. I don't know where they are. Can I get back in the library's good graces at some point?
We would absolutely love to have you back at the library, yes. If it's from that long ago, we probably don't even worry about it anymore either, to be honest. So we can work on that.
Okay.
We can get you back in.
My fear is I'm going to go in there and ask for a card, and they're going to give me like a $1,000 bill.
I'm sure we won't make that happen.
Okay, I could trust you.
We have a lot of programs to get people back in the game.
Okay, well, good. So there's kind of a perception problem, I think, encoded into that question, which is old people like me, we basically associate the library with books,
mm-hmm.
right?
Sure.
I mean, they're print books, they have a spine, a sturdy cover, pages that smell like an old closet. And we know intellectually that information has gone digital. People do their research online and they read books on their smartphones or tablets or listen to them in their cars. So I think maybe there's a tendency to think, well, libraries are headed for extinction. Is that a perception that you come across?
That's out there. We hear it from time to time from people, but it's fascinating. It does not match the data at all.
At least in an introductory paragraph, just from 30,000 feet, about why libraries are still relevant.
There's, I think, a couple ways to look at it. One has to do with what people are looking for, and that is that they are still looking for information, and not everyone in the world has become completely electronic. Electronic is not available to everyone. You or I may be blessed to have great internet access, but that's not the case for everyone. And so there's plenty of people who come to the library as a way to access the information or the entertainment that they're looking for. They also could come looking for programming, especially for families, maybe for folks who want ongoing education or cultural enrichment. You know, the classical concerts on Sunday are free, and that's a wonderful opportunity for people. The other thing that happens is people in our culture are still looking for a third place. They're looking for someplace other than home and other than work that they can spend time, and they don't have to buy a ticket to get in. And they can own that space. And we continue to see a very high interest in having a place to call their own.
But what are people doing in libraries now that is different than maybe 20 years ago?
Sure. You know, the biggest difference, of course, is they're using their own technology in our libraries. It's fun to walk around a library and see the number of people who have some books by them and who also have their own iPad or laptop set up. And they're going back and forth, and they might even have their phone next to them, too. And so they're doing whatever they're doing. They're doing work. They're writing a graduate paper. Maybe they're looking for a job. 20 years ago, they came. They looked at newspapers for jobs in other cities and things like that. Or they might have come in to write that paper, and there was a pile of index cards and some books. So the props are different, but the journey is very similar.
So what's the evidence that people are still using the Indianapolis libraries? What data do you collect?
We collect a lot of data, and so we're always counting how many people have library cards, how many items are checked out, whether it's electronic or print. And we also monitor door count. And just as an example of what's happening with door count, the new Michigan Road Library opened in December, and it has been running 10,000 to 11,000 people per month visiting that library. And it's now been open for going on 6 months. The numbers have only increased each month. They have not leveled off yet.
So you mentioned one of the libraries that just opened. Which one was that?
Michigan Road at 63rd and Michigan Road. Brand new building.
What's the other one I'm missing? Oh, the Eagle Branch.
Yes. Saturday, June 1st, we opened the new Eagle Branch Library. This replaces a Eagle building that was built in the 1970s. This new one is off of Pike Plaza Road back by the Meyer Grocery Store. And that opened on Saturday. It's in the middle of the international marketplace and has a lot of very global flavor to it, to be honest.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. Tell me how... In what ways are these new libraries good examples of the new way that libraries are used and the new conception of a library?
Sure. Well, let's talk about Eagle for just a minute. The international marketplace, we know that area is extremely diverse. There's probably 90 languages spoken in that part of the city. You can see all the ethnic restaurants and the ethnic grocery stores. When you look at the collection that we are offering in that building, outside of Central Library, it has the next largest collection of foreign language materials. It has a large collection of ethnic cookbooks. The staff there is a little more diverse than some of our places. It includes a librarian who came here to our city from Africa. And if you look at the artwork around the building, it's a beautiful array of very international themed art on loan to us from the International Marketplace Organization. So that branch is really trying to connect with and represent its community. And we try to do that as much as we can wherever we are across the city. So if you go to the Hallville branch, you're going to find library staff who are assigned there specifically because they speak Spanish. And in the Hallville area, that's a real asset.
In what other ways are these new buildings, say, different from a library that would have been built 30 or 40 years ago?
The amount of programming space is important because we find that people want to come to the library for ongoing learning experiences. They want to come and hear a speaker. They may want to attend a craft program. Their children may want to come and actually see the folks who bring the animals in for the programming. They also have study rooms because of people spending long periods of time doing their own independent work at a library but wanting to do it quietly because our libraries are not quiet like they were years ago. I think you also will find a much larger array of computer equipment in our libraries. People are a little more prone to have access to the internet now because of their smartphones, but at the end of the day, significant numbers of people still come to the library to use the library's computers.
Who's coming to use their computers if they're not bringing their own?
I would say a couple of groups of people. You certainly have young people who don't have access at home, for example, to high-speed internet. You have low-income folks who don't have a smartphone, and you see them lined up at 10 o'clock in the morning when the door opens. They want to check their email just like I do when I wake up at 6 in the morning, and the first thing I grab for is my smartphone so I can check my email. You also see an older population. They may not feel comfortable acquiring that kind of stuff for their own use at home, but they will come to us and use it. We certainly see unemployed folks who will come. Perhaps they had internet access for a while, but they had to drop it.
It sounds, in a way, like a social safety net.
That's an interesting way to put it, actually. And I think for various people at certain times in their lives, we absolutely are. We have had people come into our job centers, which are actually almost career counseling centers, and they'll say that they are either unemployed, they were laid off, or perhaps they can see the writing on the wall and they know they've got to skill up. Hmm. We've got those people coming, and they're either doing job searches on our computers with our staff helping them, or they may be working their way through one of the thousands of electronic online classes that you can get from our collection, and you can brush up your Excel skills or your some aspect of your accounting skills or whatever it may be. You can just sit at the library all day and take those little classes by yourself and get to the point where you're a little bit more marketable.
Before we get any further, I've crossed my fingers here because I did want to forget to ask this. Why aren't libraries quiet?
You know, people are not quiet like they used to be either. We're not quiet anywhere. We're not quiet in church, you know? We've just become a much more fluid society, and that notion of certain sacred spaces is less a part of us anymore.
At some point, did the librarians have to say, okay, how loud can we let this get? Well, do we have to stop shushing people?
We try really hard to chill.
This is brilliant. And it's a great metaphor for us stopping just for a second. We're going to take a quick break and talk about our sponsor. This is the Abby J. Podcast.
The IBJ Podcast is sponsored by the Office of Minority and Women Business Development, which is committed to serving and certifying businesses owned by minorities, women, veterans, and people with ADA disabilities. The agency helps you access contract opportunities for city, county, municipal, and privately funded projects in central Indiana. For more information, call the office at 317-327-5262 or email at omwbd@indy.gov.
This is the Abby J. Podcast. We're speaking with Jackie Nides of the Indianapolis Public Library, and we're talking about the growth in the library system. We've covered the two recently opened branches, and tell me if I'm right, there are four more in process.
That's right, Mason, there are. The next one in the pipeline here is the new Brightwood Branch Library at 25th and Sherman. And if you drive through that area right now, you will actually see that the steel is on the site, so it feels real. That should open in the spring. We're very excited about that one. We've been in a rental facility in Brightwood for 100 years, and now they are going to get their own permanent library.
Wow.
Okay. After that, West Perry Township. We have purchased some land that is at the corner of Southport Road and Harding, and we will be constructing a library right there. We will also be relocating the Glendale Library out of the second floor of the mall to a more accessible location right in the neighborhood, and ultimately also building a brand new library right on the edge of Fort Ben up on 56th Street.
So at the end of this phase, how many Indianapolis Public Library branches will there be?
I think when we're all done, there's going to be 24.
Of the six that we just discussed, so a few of these are replacing a branch that's already in the area. A few of them, you're introducing a library to the area.
Yes, West Perry is new in that area, although it will actually replace the old Fountain Square Library, but they're not close to each other, so it doesn't feel like a replacement. From our standpoint, from a staffing and operational standpoint, we're closing Fountain Square and adding West Perry. Hmm. When we opened Michigan Road, we closed Flanner House. So these were two smaller inner city locations that closed to allow some larger locations to be built further out. The net add at the end of the day is Fort Ben. That one will actually be a net addition to our program.
How much does it cost to build a new library now?
Depends on which one it is. Michigan Road, which we just were talking about, ran us a little over $7 million. Eagle is in that same ballpark. By the time we get up to replacing Glendale, we're going to be talking more about $10 million.
So you used to be the CFO of the library. I'm going to count on you to be gentle with us and explain where the money for building these libraries came from.
The money came from, of course, the Indianapolis taxpayers, who supported through the library board and the city county council our desire to sell bonds to raise the money to build these, and then we pay those bonds back over time out of a property tax rate. The good news was we designed a financial plan that allows us to have no tax increase for the entire run of all this construction work. We planned it out pretty strategically. We picked a tax rate, promised we'd stay there, and it's turning out to be the case.
And from what I understand, the new branches, or at least some of the new branches, are owned, will be owned, by the library instead of leasing them.
It was a very strategic decision to move to ownership of all of our buildings rather than leasing. If we have a lease, we pay for it out of the operating budget. And given the tax controls here in Indiana, that budget faces a lot of pressure. Mm. But by being able to use the bond issues and build buildings that we would own, then there's no pressure for that monthly rent payment coming out of the operating budget. So it was definitely a strategic decision for financial reasons.
Mm. So in the end, you save money.
I think in the end, we don't have much of a difference in the money. It's a question of which pocket it's coming out of. One pocket is really constricted on what you can do. And so that was where the leases were. And we stopped using that pocket.
What basically at the end of this building cycle will the ratio be between owned and leased?
When we're finished with all of these, everything we have, we will own.
No kidding.
There will be no more leased buildings.
Wow.
And that's critical. If you think about $250,000 in lease payments that we won't have anymore, it makes a big difference for our budget.
And also, as part of that series of bonds, were there also a lot of renovations?
Absolutely, because of our buildings, some of them are still in great locations and are pretty busy, but they were built in the 80s, and they definitely need to have some freshening up. They need some adjustments to meet the demand for some of the new services we spoke about earlier. So there are four that are getting major rehabs, if you will. Wayne and Lawrence are getting underway right now this year. We're having community meetings to confirm what the citizens in those areas are looking for. Warren and Southport were done 2 years ago. And if you visit either one of those, I think you'll see a real different vibe in the building compared to when it was built in the 80s. They've been opened up a little bit more. Certainly all the restrooms and meeting rooms have been upgraded to meet the demands for today. More study spaces have been added. And in some instances, just the sheer access to the building has been improved.
Hmm. I wanted to talk a little bit more about the programming now and maybe how it's a little bit different from 20 years ago, or at least from what I remember. Movies.
Yes.
Crafts.
Yes.
Okay. Live animals.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Art classes.
Uh-huh.
Book discussions.
Sounds like you've read the summer schedule.
I did.
Okay.
I did research, though not at the library, but on the library's website. Here was one thing that I thought was fascinating. The Seed Library, what is that?
Oh, that's at least three of our branches already, and I think there's three more working on it. You know, a lot of people feel very strongly about the quality of the seeds that they're putting in their gardens. They're searching for the heirloom seeds. They're searching for something that's a little less commercialized, and they want to trade in with others. And so this whole notion of being able to have a central place where folks in a community come together and trade their resources back and forth or trade the seeds back and forth, that's literally what's happening. And you'll see these old card catalogs, actually, and each drawer has different kinds of seeds in it. And you can trade. You can bring some. You can take some. And there's usually some master gardener type folks who are helping to curate these kinds of programs, and they've become quite popular. And I think it's a reminder of what we do at the library so often is that we sense an interest in the community about something, and we look to see whether we should be helping make it easier for them. We have all kinds of programs, and you named a bunch of them. Of course, I have to smile because in a way, our programs are not new if you think about the fact that this is the 100th anniversary of the summer reading program. Mm-hmm. And we have found people who have brought their summer reading logs into us from the 50s, for heaven's sakes. And they're so proud of the reading that they did when they were children. But we do have a lot of new programs. There's a whole interesting program about making magazines. This is a big, cool thing with teens these days, where they're making their own magazines. And we have things to do with 3D printers. You know, that's certainly newer technology than what might have been in libraries over the years.
How so?
Not everybody owns a 3D printer, but we have them at several of our libraries, and the kids can come in and learn the coding to program the production of something and then literally print it off. It might be a keychain, it might be a Christmas ornament, different things that they're able to do. We actually have coding classes that we teach at the library.
What I'm gathering from my research and talking to you is that the library that I grew up with provided books. The library today is providing what the community needs, depending on the community.
And for some people, that may still be books. You know, There are still lots of folks who want to read historical romances, and we will help them find every single one of them if that's what they want. But if what they really want is to download and stream movies, we can do that for them too. And all they need is their library card.
Jackie, thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Always happy to talk about the library and to welcome people to come in and look around and figure out what they'd like and make sure that they ask us if they don't see it so we can make sure we can get it for them.
My thanks again to Jackie Natus. And as a quick postscript, after the interview, we actually checked to see if I was still in the library's computer system, and there is no record of me or my overdue fees. So if you're in a similar situation to mine, you might be able to start over. And before you get on with the rest of your week, I wanted to draw your attention to some other stories in this week's edition of IBJ. Lindsay Erdody explains how the Indiana legislature has made investing in Indiana startups much more attractive for folks from out of state. Sam Quinn details how Indianapolis is joining Noblesville and Fishers in their effort to redevelop the Nickel Plate Railroad Corridor into a 17-mile pedestrian trail. And Mickey Shuey explains how the Indiana Pacers might be able to parlay the scheduled upgrades for the Fieldhouse into a much richer sponsorship deal for the arena. You can find these stories in the copy of IBJ you have delivered to your home or office, and at IBJ.com. And remember to get unfettered access to all of IBJ's award-winning business content. Just hit the subscribe button. Thanks again for making time for the IBJ podcast, which is edited by Leslie Weidenbender. I'm Mason King, and we'll be back again next week.